Need some motivation on your Chinese business endeavour? May be curious about what the Chinese business environment is all about? Or want to laugh out loud listening to war stories on the ground in China? Then this is your show, China Business Cast.
So hello everybody and welcome to another China Business Cast. As always, Mike is here. Hey Mike.
Hey Shlomo, how's it going?
I'm good, how are you doing?
I'm a little bit chilly. As I mentioned last show, I'm up in my wife's hometown in Shenyang, China, where it's not shorts and t-shirts up here. It's jackets and pants and cold nights.
It's only October.
Yeah, in October. We are early October and it's cold.
It is snowing there, right?
No snow, but it's cold. I mean, it has hot summers, but we're in kind of autumn or fall season right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Great. So, how about you? How are things?
The last show about a very exciting week I had, and indeed, that was an exciting week. I was at a conference called DLD in Tel Aviv, which was great. It was for 2 days. I was able to go only to one of those, but it's basically an innovation festival, and there were a lot of stuff going on there. There were many, many Chinese visitors there, many Asians in general, but Chinese in particular. So that was very interesting for me to see this and speaking with people. Also some fun stuff that I did. So there was this whole artificial intelligence, and I was playing in a tanks game against a computer. Uh-huh. With in AI, kind of like with an actual remote control. And that was a lot of fun. You can go on a board, and there's a camera that takes analyzes what's on the board, and then you can move bricks, so it would be like walls, and then the tanks can hide behind those. And this whole thing is going on. It's a real game. It was a lot of fun. And something else, Samsung had a really, really cool VR roller coaster. So we're sitting at these seats and they were moving seats, and that was amazing. The only thing that was missing there was the wind in my face. It was absolutely amazing. I really liked it. So yeah, I don't know if they're taking this around the world or whatever, but you should try that. Anyway, yeah, that was my week. I had several others of other events then, but that was definitely one of the highlights.
Very, very cool. That the wind, I'm sure they could put wind in your face somehow, right? There should be fans or something.
They can do that pretty easily. Yeah. That's the small part missing, I guess. But yeah, if they really want to make it, you know, perfect, they should have put a fan there.
Sure. So back to our podcast, you know, we're always looking for feedback from listeners, and we have one suggestion for a same question every show. So this is our first recording where we had that section, and it's a request from the China Business Cast WeChat group, which is pretty cool. If you guys aren't already involved, definitely join our WeChat group and, you know, let us know what ideas you have for this type of same question.
Yeah. Also, we have the QR code at the show notes. This one is episode 48, so go ahead and scan and join there. All the details are there. Speaking of community, I was actually sending a survey to the Startup Noodle community, to my website. I really wanted to engage with them and be more helpful and see what people need. And I promised on that email sending to the list saying that the first person who actually answers their survey is going to get a shout out at China Business Cast. So this is a shout out for Alvin Shin from Hong Kong. Thank you very much for being the first person answering that survey. And we have others as well. So thank you so much for that. But yeah, I kept my promise. Thank you, Alvin. And now to our guests. We have Chris Dobbing from Cambridge Masks coming to speak. Now, this is a very special startup. The reason is that it's a low-tech startup, but being very successful. It's low-tech because they're doing face masks to protect from pollution. And that's obviously a hot topic in China. And they are actually manufacturing outside of China And well, I can't say it's really low tech, it's high tech because it's military technology for filtering the particles and all that. But it, what I mean is that it's not, you know, computer technology. So these guys are doing something very extraordinary. And that was a great, great interview. This guy was also in a Y Combinator. So that was interesting to speak about. I'm sure you enjoy it.
Yes, let's listen in.
Tune in. Thanks.
So hello, everybody, and welcome to another China Business Cast. We've got a guest today from Beijing. His name is Chris Dobbing, and he's the CEO of Cambridge Masks. I've met Chris several times through the startup scene in Beijing. My company and his company are actually, well, at least used to be at the same office. I don't know if still currently. So this is how I know Chris, and he's got an interesting story of building a, let's say, non-tech company in Beijing, which was interesting for me as it's not so common, or at least from the people I know. So welcome, Chris, to the show.
Thank you. Really good to be with you.
Great having you. So I read some of the things that you do and saw some of the internet clips that you got about Cambridge Masks and on your LinkedIn profile, but still be glad if you can tell our listeners more about Cambridge Masks. And more importantly, why need another masks company? Because there are so many of them and you can actually buy them pretty cheap. So why Cambridge Masks?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, well, there's a lot of options, but I moved to China in 2012 in the summer. Mm-hmm. I was working as an education consultant, and a lot of the young children I was working with were getting really nasty breathing problems and coughing a lot of the time. I was very lucky because I grew up in the countryside in England and clean air and blue sky, and I found it really sad that a lot of the children here think it's normal to spend all day coughing. And you even get some children who were asked to draw pictures, and instead of colouring in the sky as blue, they'd use a grey colour, which is really tragic and really upset me. Wow. So I was hoping that I could find a pollution mask that can at least help them with when they have to go outside. But unfortunately, there were almost no masks available for children that met the international standards for air pollution filtration. And unfortunately, a lot of customers were misinformed that cotton masks were filtering the most dangerous air pollution, mm-hmm. and that surgical masks would filter any pollution at all. And both of those are not true. You need to have an N95 or N99 rated pollution mask if you're going to filter. And even none of the really big famous companies manufacture those kind of masks for children.
Okay, but we're talking about, you know, reliable companies here, let's say 3M and companies.
Yeah, but they don't make a child mask. They make an adult one, but not for children.
Oh, I see. That's the difference. Okay.
So that was my motivation. And I contacted 5 or 6 different international smaller companies to kind of offer my services in China and explain how big the market was. Got in touch with Vogmask, which is a US company that makes pollution masks. And together, I started the distribution rights for China. And together, we developed a range of children's masks and took that to the market. It became very, very successful in China, and we had a great run. I realized there were a lot of improvements that could be made to the product and wanted to kind of get out of the situation of being a distributor, which can be very frustrating for lots of various reasons. I don't ever recommend distributing products. So decided in January 2015 to set up my own business doing pollution masks. Did some fundraising, got the manufacturer up and running, and then we managed to find a supplier of UK military technology. And we're able to put that in the mask. And that means that we've got incredibly high filtration rates for gas pollution, viruses, and bacteria, which is something you don't find in even the very high-quality masks that do particulate filtration.
How did you convince your investors that you need, I mean, that what's your competitive edge over other masks companies? Because you're just starting out. You had, I guess, nothing out there yet. And
yeah, it was just me and a laptop.
They want to see the value.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'd managed to manufacture a few prototypes, and we'd done the lab testing already, so I could show them a bit of paper that says, look, I've built something that's already better than almost every mask on the market. Here's the lab results to prove it. And that was quite a big investment at the time. It cost a few $1,000s to do the lab tests, but it gave them that confidence that we were serious and we knew what we were doing. And then, of course, I had the track record involved with the other mask company, and so I could show that I knew what I was doing. I built all of that from scratch myself, mm-hmm. and we had a multi-million dollar distribution network. So I knew the players in the market. I knew who to speak to. I knew how to go about selling the product and how to market it. So they could see that there was a strong potential with what I was doing. And so I managed to raise my first few investments from key people that I'd been introduced to. And also I just kind of went around and spoke to friends of friends and finally mm-hmm. managed to find a few angels, got everything going. And then between January and September 2015, we did all of our fundraising, sourcing, manufacture, and had products on the shelf by September in Beijing. Started selling, and we had about 50% monthly growth going through towards the end of the year. Wow. Had an amazing December when the pollution got really bad in India and in China, and then unfortunately ran out of stock completely. So wow. Then we've spent a lot of this year trying to like build up our inventories and make sure we're ready for the next kind of pollution season, if you want to call it that, which usually runs from around October to April in Beijing or North China. Yeah, so we're just starting to gear up for that now.
Are you only Beijing or you're in other cities as well?
We've got offices in Cambridge in the UK, Hong Kong and Beijing, but the main bulk of our staff are Beijing based.
Right, but the masks themselves, you can get them now. They're distributed all over China now, I guess.
Yes, well, we have distribution in six territories, Mongolia, mainland China, Taiwan, Singapore, lots of other places, as well as India. And we've got users now in over 40 countries. So we get orders through our .com website, cambridgemask.com. Mm-hmm. And people from all over the world are ordering, often because of low immune systems. So if you've got chemotherapy, or cystic fibrosis, bronchitis, emphysema, or severe allergies like pollen allergy, then a mask can be a really good solution. Or if you're cycling in urban environments behind big diesel buses, you don't want to be breathing in diesel smoke as you cycle. So again, a mask's a really good solution to that. And we also get about a third of our customers are traveling to India or China and want a pollution mask when they come.
I see. I saw on your LinkedIn profile that you used to work previously for another mask company, and then mm-hmm. you left it. And what I'm trying to understand, if that was the trigger for starting Cambridge Mask, and what are the things that you saw there that weren't right or could be improved, and you did the next step in Cambridge Masks?
Bug Mask is a really good product, and we had a lot of success with it in China. The fundamental challenge, though, is being a distributor, because you have very little control over the quality of the product, and you have very little control over your costings, and there's a very long pipeline involved in trying to improve the product. So if you have some ideas about packaging or about improvements or localization, you have to go back and forth between the brand owner and they have to go to the factory, and it just takes a long time to make any improvements. Mm-hmm. And also ultimately, for every dollar of profit you earn as a distributor, you're building $9 or $10 worth of value into a brand and company you don't own or control. So very quickly, you know, you've made, should we say, like $1 million in sales. Maybe mm-hmm. you've got like a few hundred thousand dollars in profit, but that's like millions of dollars of brand value and like company value that you built into someone else's business. And so being a distributor actually is not such a great thing to do if you're like a pure entrepreneur. Well, it's hard to describe it, but if you're like an entrepreneur who really believes in building something from scratch. So distribution is a great business if you don't want to manufacture for yourself, and it is incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. But you, by not doing that, you kind of lose a lot of the value in the long term.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So that was my main motivation for wanting to do my own thing. I could build a better product that had better filtration and better packaging, and also kind of have control and build value into something that I owned and controlled myself.
So you're essentially competing them now?
Yes.
Okay. You told me a few weeks ago that you just came back from California. You were at the Y Combinator Accelerator. So I want to know more about this experience, how it was for Cambridge Masks. What was the process like, and why you decided to go eventually?
Yes, well, it was kind of coincidental. I never really intended to apply for Y Combinator. Of course, I knew about them. They're the incubator behind Dropbox, Airbnb, Stripe, like pretty much any major unicorn you can name in Silicon Valley has had something to do Y Combinator. So they're really the very pinnacle of incubators globally. And it turned out that Adora Chung, who's one of the founders, one of the partners now, mm-hmm. And she was the founder of HomeJoy, which had raised $38 million in Google Ventures funding, was living in Beijing for 3 or 4 months, and she was very interested in pollution masks. So one of my friends who knew her introduced her to me, and we met up for coffee, had a really nice chat, and then she suggested I apply for the program, which I'd never really thought about doing. Mm-hmm. Sent in my application, and they invited me for interview, and they pay all of your flights and accommodation when you go out there, so I thought, why not? You know, at worst, it's a free trip to California. Yeah. Went out there, had 2 really awesome interviews with them. Because we were a little bit further along than most companies on the program, we were offered a place on fellowship rather than core. So there are two programs. Core, you go and spend 3 months in Silicon Valley, hacking away on your product and kind of like getting your business started. The fellowship program is remote, so it's much more friendly for international companies, mm-hmm. and especially people who've already got employees and offices and stuff in other countries. So it worked really well for us. And you have a weekly training session and conference call with all of the companies and 3 or 4 partners at YC. And it's essentially growth hacking. So they give you a load of training, mentorship. You get one-to-one office hours with your partner that's assigned to you. You can reach out to any of the partners you want to arrange office hours and get mentoring and advice. But the most valuable thing is their social network. So there's a social network called Bookface, which is like their internal social network. And you can reach out to any single one of the other kind of alumni within that network. And it goes back now, I think, 7 or 8 years worth of alumni mm-hmm. that you can just reach out to. And there's kind of a code of conduct or like code of honor that you always reply to people who are kind of through YC. And so even we know how busy everyone is, but generally if a YC person contacts you, you're pretty good at replying and you're giving them like instant feedback and attention. And so it can really help with your acceleration. If you're looking for new factories or, you know, you've had a few problems with something or you need a lawyer to do this or that, you can just email the lists or put a post up and almost always people will be getting back to you with really great quality advice. And so it just helps you grow so much faster.
Are they taking or investing? Are they investing any money in the
Yes, they have invested in us as well.
Oh, so that's an investment. It's yeah. not a they actually putting money in. It's not that for their
yes.
the forum you're paying with equity or something. It's for the right investment.
It was originally $20,000 for 1.5% equity.
1.5, okay.
Although I believe their model is changing over the next few months. So you'd have to keep an eye on
what
they're
really...
But that
would be for the core program, not the program that you joined.
No, core is $120,000 for 7%.
Oh, okay.
And the fellowship program until recently was 1.5% for $20,000. But as I said, I believe that's changing. So you'll have to look at the YC website for updates.
How long that is, the program?
3 months.
Oh, it's also 3 months.
Yeah.
Okay, and how
it's very similar. Sure. It's very similar to the core program. It's just done remotely. So you all stream in for a webinar once a week, and then you also have your office hours with your mentors and with your partner. Mm-hmm. But I was given Sanjay Dastoor as my mentor, for example, and he is the founder of Boosted Boards, and they've just raised, you know, like huge sums of money, really, really experienced and awesome guy. And you can just sit down and like explain some of the challenges you're facing. And he's like, yeah, we went through all of that, do this, this, and this. and it just really, really helps. And because everyone in the alumni network knows what you're going through, they know what life is like as an entrepreneur and how tough it is. They know how to help you. They know not to waste your time. And you mm-hmm. know that when you're asking for support, like you're going to get really quality advice mm-hmm. instead of people who like to sit on their armchair and kind of give you opinions rather than actual hard things you need to do.
So how is Cambridge Mass different now from before joining YC, Y Combinator?
I think we're a lot clearer on our goals and our focuses. We weren't really prepared for rapid growth. I think one of the big things YC trains you for is rapid growth. And that's actually, if you read the kind of descriptions and blog posts, they'll talk about startup as a word for company that has the potential for very rapid growth. It's not a small business that's been around for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. It's like a company that has that potential to just go kaboom and grow really, really quickly. And so that's what they're really looking for. And that's the combination of having the right business model and the right founders in the right marketplace at the right time. But if you can pull those things together, there's huge potential.
Okay, okay. Let's talk a bit about manufacturing, okay?
Sure.
So you guys are selling in China, but you are manufacturing the UK, which is totally upside down than everybody else.
Yes, exactly.
And my question is, how do you handle manufacturing cost and competing with manufacturers in China eventually?
Well, in the UK, we're able to get that really great quality mix of good people and good materials. That means we end up with a really fantastic quality product. Chinese consumers are incredibly sophisticated today, and they're also incredibly demanding. And yes, our product has a higher price point than you'd expect from a lot of other products on the market, but that's because it's really, you know, outstanding in terms of the unique selling points. We use military-grade material. They're manufactured in the UK. They last hundreds of hours before they need replacing, and they're filtering pathogens like viruses, bacteria, gas pollution like petrol fumes and smells, and particulate pollution like PM2.5. And so it means that, you know, it's a good quality product and it has a higher price, but because it's a good quality product, people are happy to pay that.
I see. And what are some of the surprising markets that you actually discovered? I mean, China obviously is a natural one. That's where you're there. But places or audiences you didn't think that would need your product and eventually they're buying that?
Well, actually, I just got back last week. I was in Delhi and Bangalore for our product launch tour in India. And the market there is maybe 4 years behind where China is now. Like, the air pollution's at a similar level in terms of severity. But the general public is only just starting to wake up to the health impacts of air pollution and also have the level of affluence where they can afford indoor air purifiers and masks. And so we're seeing a very rapid growth in the air purifier sector. And I'm starting to get like a lot more interest in air pollution masks as well. And so we're working with Atlanta Healthcare, which are an air purifier company that's had about 6 years market experience in India. They're based in Delhi, and they're our exclusive distributor for the India market. And so we're very confident of getting some fantastic business there over the next few years. But internationally, we've also found some really interesting mini niches. For example, a lot of long-distance airlines still serve nuts on their flights. Okay. And so people with severe nut allergies are buying our mask as a protection while they're flying long distance.
So, okay, so we are getting towards the end of the episode. And we have a new section where we ask the same questions all the people we interview. This is a new one, so you're the first one, and this is also a call out for our listeners emailing us and telling us and suggesting names for that section, because we don't have a name for that, so go on, guys. So you'll be the first one, Chris.
And, it's an honor. I'll try to do it justice.
You'll be fine. So my question for you is, which blogs you read regularly for fun and also for business that you can learn most of?
I think the two, personally, I read Freakonomics, and professionally, Y Combinator always come out with amazing quality stuff. If you're going to read any startup, just sit down for like 3 or 4 hours and read all of the Y Combinator stuff. And it's so useful.
Okay. And the second question in this section is, what kind of online tools you guys use to manage the company and for what you need them?
For task management, I'm a really big fan of Trello, which works quite well when you're a smaller team. It's become a bit harder as we grow. It's not really optimized for like larger teams, but it's really, really good for China because it's not blocked by the firewall. And so it's a really good way to like be swapping attachments and sharing things amongst an international group. And then we also use Zendesk for our customer service support, which has been really awesome. And we get a discount on that because we're a Y Combinator alumni company. So they've been really awesome. Yeah, I think those are the big ones that I use every day.
Okay. I missed the second one, just the name of that.
So there's Trello, T-R-E-L-L-O.
I got that.
And then the other one is Zendesk, Z-E-N-D-E-S-K.
Yeah, I know Zendesk. I just was the cut off there.
And it's really great because it pulls in your Facebook and Twitter comments, as well as all your customer service email, all in one place. So you can, you won't lose customers between different things, because they'll leave a message on your Facebook and then email you and expect the same person reading the email to have seen the Facebook. And of course, that's not always true in a company. So it's just a great way to make sure all the data is in one place.
Got you. Okay. We're getting towards the end of the interview, and I want to know, for our listeners, tell us what's the best ways to get in touch with you, follow you, because people might want to know more.
Sure. Well, they're welcome to add me on LinkedIn and then send me a message through that.
Okay. We're going to add this to the show notes.
You're welcome to share my LinkedIn profile on the page of the interview.
On every episode, we got show notes where we add different things we spoke about and also the personal details that were given. So we're going to add those.
Sure. Sounds great. The other thing, if there are any entrepreneurs in China who are struggling with email systems, we've found that Zoho is really good, Zoho. Okay. They're an Indian company, but again, they're not blocked by the firewall. And they have a good CRM and a document sharing platform and the email and a calendar sharing platform all integrated in one thing. And so it's a really, really great way of running a company.
Nice. We use Insightly. We do log in with Google Apps, so we do need the VPN for that, but that works wonderful.
But it's a big problem when you get to Lianhui every year, the two government meetings, like almost all VPNs get blocked, and then you'll have like 2 or 3 weeks you can't run your company. So we got very frustrated by that.
Got you. Okay, Chris, thank you so much for your time. I learned a lot, and also about Y Combinator. Thank you for coming.
Great. Thank you for having me. Really good to speak to you.
Awesome. Thanks.
Okay. Have a good day. Bye.
Good day. Bye-bye.
Doing business in China is a complex world. You can quickly feel alone and lost in its maze. But don't worry. China Business Cast is here for you. Sign up for our newsletter and regular updates on our website at www.chinabusinesscast.com. Thanks for tuning in.